G'day you mob, Pete here, and this is another episode of Aussie English, the number one place for anyone and everyone wanting to learn Australian English. So today I have a Goss episode for you where I sit down with my old man, my father, Ian Smisson, and we talk about the week's news, whether locally down under here in Australia or non-locally overseas in other parts of the world, okay? And we sometimes also talk about whatever comes to mind, right? If we can think of something interesting to share with you guys related to us or Australia, we also talk about that in the Goss. So these episodes are specifically designed to try and give you content about many different topics where we're obviously speaking in English and there are multiple people having a natural and spontaneous conversation in English. So it is particularly good to improve your listening skills. In order to complement that, though, I really recommend that you join the podcast membership or the academy membership at aussieenglish.com.au, where you will get access to the full transcripts of these episodes, the PDFs, the downloads, and you can also use the online PDF reader to read and listen at the same time. Okay, so if you really, really want to improve your listening skills fast, get the transcript, listen and read at the same time, keep practicing, and that is the quickest way to level up your English. Anyway, I've been rabbiting on a bit. I've been talking a bit. Let's just get into this episode, guys. Smack the bird, and let's get into it. G'day, guys. Welcome to this episode of Aussie English.
Hey, everyone.
It is the Goss. And Dad's already got his little iPad out.
But I have.
I thought before we get into that, we could talk a little bit about fatherhood.
Fatherhood. Jeez. He gives me these deep concepts when I walk in, sit down, and says, right, today we're going to talk about the philosophy. I haven't had a beer yet. Yeah, philosophy of fatherhood.
Philosophy of fatherhood.
Yes. All right, let's go.
7% as well.
How long have we got?
Oh, man. Go to town.
Go to town.
So, I guess it's one of those things that's obviously new in my life, not very new in your life. As it happened more than half your life ago,
yeah,
you became a father for the first time.
I did.
Do you want to talk about, I guess, and we can discuss this, but what that process was like and what the-
Didn't we have this conversation about 22 years ago when you were about 10?
Could have been.
About the process of becoming a father?
Oh, well. We can talk about the birds and the bees too.
It's a bit late for you.
I wonder what it's like. You guys are going to have to let me know in your language if you have that sort of expression, the birds and the bees.
The birds and the bees, yeah.
I don't know why we say the birds and the bees.
I think it's a euphemism. I know. It's not like do anything, but it's a euphemism, obviously, for the talk that you have to have with your children about how babies come along.
Yeah, it's a stork. It brings a little baby in a sheet.
Yeah.
But, yes, so what was it like when-
Cheers.
Obviously, in the- 80s, I guess it was 1987, April the 18th, that you had me.
Yes, it was. Exactly right.
Were you guys, did you feel like you were prepared? And how does it sort of contrast with what you've seen my sister and myself go through being both new parents in the last few years?
Yeah, look, I don't know that anybody is ever prepared to be a father or a mother for the first time.
Yeah.
To be a parent for the first time because you can, obviously I had younger siblings, as did you. So
both the eldest.
Yeah. So we got to see our parents being parents of somebody else. Was the point of
eventually.
That. Eventually, yeah. apart from just the your own parent child relationship, but that's obviously very different. And then there's the intellectual thing of you think you know what being a parent is all about, and you read, and I don't know about you, but certainly your sister has said one of the worst things that ever happened to her was the amount of crap on the internet that you. that you just feel compelled, particularly as a pregnant, young pregnant woman, you feel compelled to read about all this stuff. And it's all conflicting and-
Well, there's a lot of those things though, right, where it's annoying that there are so many different ways. Like, what is it, the expression, there's so many different ways to kill a cat or skin a cat?
Skin a cat.
Skin a cat, yeah, right? So many different ways to skin a cat. Who knows how many people are out there skinning cats?
Yeah, I'm not sure where that expression came from. Where a rabbit or a deer or something, but anyway.
Something you're kangaroo. Probably more likely to you
all
remember
those,
that.
To though. All those cat skinners out there, show us how many ways you can do it.
But it seems like there are lots of those things now where we thought when the internet came out in, I guess, the early 90s, you were just like, oh, my God, we're going to have a library at our fingertips. And then in the noughties, the 2000s, maybe the 2010s, you realized, oh, my God, there's going to be so much information out there that the real trouble is going to be sifting through all of it.
And most of it's pornography or funny cats.
Well, you don't have to do much sifting there, right? No. It's all good. I mean, cat videos, right? Come on, guys. You've got to watch them from start to finish.
Yeah.
But do you think that we had it then easier or harder or both simultaneously than you did because of that abundance of information?
Look, funnily enough, there was obviously less information around, but I don't think any of it was less conflicting because it didn't matter whether you were reading a book or you were speaking to someone. Everybody had an opinion, and most of those opinions conflicted with other people's opinions. So,
just like on the internet.
Yeah, exactly. And the best piece of advice I think I ever got, which was is when somebody said, listen to everybody, but don't take notice of anyone. in other words, make up your own mind. Now, some people are going to give you good advice, but it'll conflict with other people. And it'll be up to you to work out what it is because everybody wants to tell you, particularly when you're a first-time parent, everybody wants to tell you either that they are an expert and you should always do what I do.
Hey, my kid didn't die.
Or they tell you all their own shitty stories and don't ever do this.
And I was typing away there because you made me think of Bruce Lee's quote that is, and I wanted to get it right when I said it. So, quote, absorb what is useful, reject what is useless, add what is essentially your own.
Yeah.
The idea of constantly researching and refining your own experience was key to Bruce Lee's way of life, more than, I imagine, just his martial arts.
Yeah.
But I've totally tried.
I wonder how he felt as a parent.
Yeah. Well, probably over the moon, right?
Yeah.
But, yeah, that quote has always stayed with me in one form or another with regards to lots of things, not just- being a parent.
Oh, look, yeah, I think it's right. But
applicable there.
And look, the other challenge with being a first-time parent is that all of this conflicting advice is coming to you at probably the most stressful time of your life. Stressful for some reasons. One is that you're not going to get much sleep for a long period of time after your baby is born. The second one is, if you're a pregnant woman or a breastfeeding woman, you are – with all apologies to all of my pregnant, ex-pregnant, and ex-breastfeeding friends, you're hormonally challenged at the same time.
Hormonally compromised. Hormonally
compromised, yeah. So, it's just not a good time to be trying to do something new. But that, on the other side, is the most exciting part of it, is that it's one of those funny things where you can look at it and go, there is no guidebook to parenting. There are actually millions of them.
Everyone does it successfully, but they don't know how.
No, no. And you, mostly, you make it up as you're going along. Now, there is no such thing as good advice, just make it up as you're going along, works to some extent. But there obviously are good advice out there.
It's usually pretty broad.
Yeah, it is.
Make sure that your child gets X number of hours of sleep.
Yeah, make sure you
feed
them.
That is.
Make sure they don't bang their head on something. Yeah, so
easier said than done.
Yeah.
Easier said than done.
Yeah.
Well, I swear that Noah's head is constantly just looking for things to smash
into. Oh, well, yeah. And that was one of the things that we sort of joked about with you and your sister is, do we just go out and get a crash helmet for the pair of you and put it on? But look. It's the most stressful thing that's ever going to happen to you, but it's the best thing that'll ever happen to you as well.
Yeah, it's annoying when those things come along where they're like equally as bad as they are good. You're kind of like-
Well, they're not equally as bad or good because otherwise we wouldn't do it.
Yeah. I guess it'd be a coin toss, right?
Yeah. The sort of good wins.
Do you think that- and I think we've spoken about this before, but do you think that Noah is going to have a better childhood than I did or you did? How would you rank those?
I don't think I could rank or rate childhoods as in even- I don't obviously live through my childhood and I lived through your childhood, but I lived through them through different eyes. And so, the same thing for Noah and his cousins. It's really hard to tell because my own life experience, obviously, is completely different 60 years later from my childhood and 30 years later from being a parent. For the first time. So, I think it's one of those things where you just say, look, yeah, it is different, but whether it's better or worse, who knows?
Do you think, though, that at the moment, like, it seems like every generation sees the next generation coming through and they're kind of like, oh, thank God I'm not them. You know, having to deal with all these other big problems that are coming.
But there aren't too many generations when they look back at history who would choose to swap their own position for somebody in the past.
Well, I can't remember who I was chatting to about this. Maybe it was you. Could have been my brother-in-law or could have been Kel. But you take for granted how good you have it right now because you don't have any reference. Like before COVID, right, we had no real external existential crisis.
No.
The last one was probably at the start of my life, which would have been the Cold War, right? And I don't, even then, it was kind of this. It wasn't on your doorstep. No, it was out there in the ether. Australia. But yeah, so like even just driving around today, you know, and I've been playing some post-apocalyptic games recently. There's a game called Far Cry 5. I was playing that. And then effectively at the end of that game, there's sort of an apocalypse that happens. This guy sets off some nuclear bombs. And then the next game, they've used, funnily enough, using the same world, which makes a lot of sense. They just made it a post-apocalyptic version of the one that you played in the beginning.
Well, that actually gives you the continuity the games as well.
So, yeah, it's really interesting. But
good
it's made
marketing
me,
strategy.
It's made me think about that. Like today, we were driving around that drive from Port Arlington to, I think, is it St. Leonard's then in Denton?
Yeah, around the Esplanade.
Yeah, and then all the way back to where we live in Ocean Grove. And you see all these houses that are like looking out with these beautiful views and no one's in them. And you're kind of thinking, holy crap, all of these houses are probably $1-2 million houses. They're uninhabited because the people who own them use them as holiday houses.
Yeah, in Melbourne.
They have boats there. They've got everything. And you're like, how throughout history, you know, it would only be probably, what, your generation that would have been like maybe the first generation to truly have a holiday house.
In the middle class.
The ability to have a holiday house, cars, boats, pretty much whatever you wanted if you desired to have that.
For your average working person, that is probably true. In fact, in my case, that wasn't true. That certainly, people who had even a second car, let alone a boat.
Yeah,
and I grew up by the beach, so you know, there were a lot of people around who had boats.
I imagine too, boats recreationally, right?
Yeah,
too, not just for work, because that would make sense if you're going out fishing
work. No, but just recreationally, the weekend fishermen or the water skiers and those sort of things. Those people tended to be, and when we were kids, went, oh, they must be rich, if they had a boat. If both parents had a car. Both parents had a car. That was, what's going on there?
Yeah.
You know, it took until we were, you know, I think I was about 10 when my mother got a car. But and that was our first family car because my father had a car, but it was provided for work.
Yeah.
So we didn't own two cars. We never owned two cars when I was, you know, my parents never owned two cars. So it's, we're always a two car family, but my father was the only one who could drive his car when nobody else drive it because it was a work car. So.
But yeah, finishing the story about driving around, I keep thinking of like, at what point does this end, right? At what point do we start going downhill where we're going to dip back down into- Have you seen The Matrix, the third movie?
Oh, I have,
in The Matrix?
I can't remember it.
You know, right at the end where they're taking a ship effectively with Neo, he's been blinded and he's getting taken to the head of the Matrix, like the AI or whatever it is, and he has to say, please don't kill my dudes, you know, let them go. There's a part in that where they're avoiding all these bombs that are coming at them from the fields and the ship dips, it goes right up into the clouds and then just as it goes through the clouds where it's all dark and everything beneath, you get to see the sun and everything is beautiful and calm for about 10 seconds.
And then
it dips back down and goes back under. Yeah. And I sort of have that feeling where you're like, are we the current tip of the iceberg at times? You're like, at what point, you know, it's got to be a trajectory of some kind.
You wonder where the plateau is and how long the plateau is going to be.
The topology of the top of the iceberg.
We certainly haven't plateaued. If you're looking at just the basic living standard of your whatever the median wage earner is, and that's a reasonable thing, that has continued to increase for generations. And it is not slowing down. So, we haven't even reached the plateau yet, let alone determining how long that plateau is going to last before things start to deteriorate. We could look at, you know, we've had a major economic crisis this year along with the COVID pandemic, and that doesn't seem to have changed anything because just the general wealth, certainly in Western countries, the general wealth of even Australia, which I think is the 13th biggest economy in the world, but it is so much smaller than the sort of top three or four.
Sounds good to be in the top 20. But
yeah,
to
we're
be
in the
honest.
Top 20, but yeah, the top two have about 50% of the world's wealth, China and the United States. But we're a reasonably large economy in terms of the rest of the world, and economy per capita, we're actually much higher than that because
iron ore and coal.
Well, exactly. But what happens when coal stops being a commodity?
Yeah,
and that's going to happen if I live my normal expected lifespan, that's going to happen within my lifetime, let alone your lifetime or Noah's lifetime. And what happens if China continues to do what they're doing at the moment with Australia, and the next thing they say is, we're not going to buy your iron ore anymore, then the Australian economy is going to go down the toilet. And we're not going to be in a position to do what we have done with COVID, for instance, where state and federal governments have thrown billions of dollars at the economy just to maintain it. And keep people not necessarily working, but keep people employed during that time, or at least getting money in so that the world doesn't fall apart. But when the government can't afford to do that, that's when you'll suddenly see that your average working person can't afford these things because for wage-
it's going to be a trade-off, right? Yeah. You're going to be like, all right, well, we can't just have our four-bedroom house on an acre block with two cars and a holiday house on the beachfront at Port Arlington anymore.
Yeah,
it's going to be, look, we can have a good high quality of life, but we have to make much greater use of space, and you can't necessarily just have frivolous, things like multiple cars when you could car share. You could have one car. You could, use public transport.
All of those.
I guess it's just sort of a multi-dimensional thing too, where you imagine that there are almost like parallel universes of this iceberg tip.
Yeah.
Some of them are going, like some aspects of it, some axes are going right up there in terms of, say, like quality of life and expected age and everything like that. But then there are other ones that are sort of plateauing off, like, median income or whatever compared to or expense of living and everything like that. So, it's interesting that there are kind of things that are going up, other things that are sort of plateauing off. There's probably things going down,
it's
like mental
complex.
Health is going down because of social media and all these other things.
And certainly over the last 7 or 8 months with the shutdown that we've experienced here, then mental health issues have become quite, I hesitate to say serious because they're always serious, but they've been a lot more obvious and I suspect a lot more frequent where we get obvious issues with people's mental health.
Yeah.
When they're in isolation, they can't necessarily work. There's all those sort of things happening, but we sort of got off the track. Fatherhood, question two.
Oh, that's it. Yeah, and Noah growing up. Do you think that Noah is going to be facing some massive existential issues in his lifetime, or do you think it's going to get better, even though things may be not perfect? It may not be utopia, but do you think, like with COVID, where it's obviously a serious problem worldwide, but compared to the Black Death in Europe that wiped out, was a third
of the population.
Of people. Yeah. Do you think it's going to be that he has, a more stable world going forward, or do you think it's sort of set to go and set to get, it can only get worse?
Yeah. Well, exactly. The dystopian future prognoses continue to get more and more advanced in the sense of people keep looking at it and going, but when I was a young teenager, it was the early 70s, late 60s, early 70s, where the certainly from America, Europe, and Australia, non-Russian Europe, it was the Soviet Union then, had the oil crisis. Because at the time, those Western countries were all heavily dependent on Middle Eastern oil.
Yeah.
And the Middle East were sitting there saying, we're going to run out of oil. Now, they were wrong.
And you're going to find other ways of extracting it that you didn't count on, right?
Yeah, like fracking. And other places and so on. Now, they were wrong, not in a sense of that eventually the world is going to run out of oil.
Yeah.
But certainly in the 70s, where we were so oil dependent for everything, and particularly in the United States and Europe, a bit less so in Australia. Because we don't have the heating problem, as an example, that people in the Northern Hemisphere have.
That's it. The West winter's still pretty warm.
Yeah. Like, if you don't have heating in your house, you just put another blanket over yourself while you're sitting and watching your television. It's not the end of the world.
This is mildly uncomfortable.
It's not the end of the world. Yeah. Whereas, I've got friends who, you live in places where it's minus 40 degrees for 3 months of the year, and if you don't have heating, you die. Yeah. This is not just it's going to be uncomfortable. You stop breathing overnight. So- So there was that major thing in the the early 1970s. It turned out to be a false claim.
Yeah.
The Cold War was always that thing hanging over people's heads from the 1950s until the 1980s. It turned out to be not a false claim, but it turned out that nothing happened. There's always going to be those things where people are hanging their hat on the next crisis. And, you know, the global climate change crisis is real, but how much effect that is going to have in an existential sense on people's, you know, survival, their experience of life over the next 20 years until Noah is a young adult, I couldn't tell you. Because I think there are, the world, other than a few countries like Australia and the United States, are certainly trying to do what they can to mediate that problem in the short term and hopefully fix it in the longer term. And so you've got to have that sort of long-term faith in humanity, I think, that a lot of these big existential crises are in people's heads, but we solve them along the way.
Usually, right before the shit's hitting the fan, you're
standing on the precipice going
after it has.
Yeah, and then you hope the bloody parachute works on the way down. So
finishing up then on fatherhood, bringing it back, what's the best and the worst part of being a dad for you?
Look, the best, it's an age thing. The best part of being a new father is that it's just a new experience. It's just fun, and it's the best thing you'll ever do is to watch another human being
develop,
grow up, develop intellectually, physically, language, the skill sets that they develop on a daily basis.
I think it's constantly seeing that sense of delight
in another human being. Unmitigated joy.
And it's everything that does it. He'll find a leaf and it blows his mind. He loses it. And you're just like, man, it's just so funny that just I could show him a card trick. I could, hand him a book. I can pick up a rock and he just loses his mind.
Yeah. And that was the same, with you and your sister when we were young.
We loved rocks.
Yeah, rocks, turning over rocks, looking for lizards and snakes.
That was me more than Annika, I think.
But so there's that experience, which is just amazing. Then I think when kids get a bit older, it's more the experience, and I can certainly say it. I don't think all adults find this, but I can certainly say it's the experience of your children turning from dependents into friends. And so that we now have lives that we can share.
Yeah.
Rather than me being responsible for your life.
That must have been a big burden. Well, it's a burden. Where you just get it off your shoulders.
But it's also, it's not so much the emotional or the financial burden, because when you become a parent, you either-
No, the worry.
You're choosing
the
that.
Constant, the worry. Oh, my God.
Well, no, yeah. I think somebody once said to me, somebody who was very old once said to me, he said, my children are in their 60s and I still- I'm up at night worrying about them. And so
Is that the same for, you reckon, Nan and Grandpa? Are you in that position?
Well, I don't have parents, so. But look, I think.
No, but worrying about
worrying
me.
About, yeah, well, yeah. Yeah, worrying is probably. Yeah, well, you're always concerned. You always want to the best for your children.
Yeah.
And so, things like you're at the moment having to move house in the next few weeks.
Yeah, it's going to be fun.
Yeah. And you just sort of sit there and go, oh, shit, I wish that didn't happen. But it's out of my control. There's nothing I can do about it, but you're still concerned about it. Mm-hmm. So I think there is that translation from that. And then the next part of it is when you become a parent. And it's not
when
just-
When you as in your children
when,
become
no,
a parent.
No, when you as in your- Yeah, the children become a parent.
You as I in can, me.
You as in you. Yeah, not you as in me.
Or in general.
Which is an interesting thing that you can- That you-
You can do in
as
English.
As in Peter can probably talk about it. I don't even know whether that's true in other languages.
You could say
the,
one.
Whether the-
One can do.
Yeah.
One but, could be in a general sense. French and Portuguese use that a little bit more than they would say but, you.
Yes, we use the second person to talk about ourselves.
In general.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which is sort of weird.
Well, you got to use some pronoun.
Yeah.
It'd be weirder if you use they or something or I, at least for us.
It. Yeah. Watching your children become parents is that next generational thing. And part of the joy of that is just sitting there going, shit, they're handling this better than I did. you know, I wouldn't have done that. Or
but you could just be like, that's because I'm around, though. You know?
Well, yeah, it's just because it's Peter.
Pete's handling it well because Pete and Annie are living
doing
nearby.
A great job because I'm here sitting there going, don't fucking do that. But then there's the other part of it, too, of just being a grandparent. Being a grandparent is
children.
A completely different experience because, and I got a friend who said to me when they became a grandmother a few years before I became a grandfather, and she said, it's like falling in love all over again, which you don't do with your own children. You don't fall in love with your own children. It's just sort of there.
From the beginning.
You are automatically in love with your children from before they're born. Mm. But with grandchildren, you just fall in love with them because of who they are, not what they are.
Mm.
And that's a funny experience, falling in love with children all over again. It's just this.
How do you feel in terms of the proximity with which you live? So the rest of us, right?
Well, because for an example for that, sorry
to
interrupt you, but
you must be really crushing
I'll
it
explain,
in terms of
yeah, I'll explain to people, give our viewers and listeners.
We've got 5 minutes left on this one. Go for
it. Yeah, all right. Our viewers and listeners, an example of that. Yesterday and the day before, I think we had almost-
I'm laughing because I was there.
He was part of it, and so was I. But over the last 2.5 days,
mm-hmm.
we have had all of us in everybody else's house, mm-hmm. but not all at once.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we're all just sort of transferring around. And, you know, Kel and Noah would come to our place, and then she'd go to Annie's, and, you know, the kids would play. And then mm-hmm. I picked up Noah's cousin, and she came to our place. And then today, we had Noah's little cousin, who's a baby still, and he was at our place. First time he'd been away from his mother for, you know, his entire life, basically. And mm-hmm. and so we're just sort of shuffling houses and people, and that's great fun.
It's probably interesting to think about that. And again, sorry to interrupt you. That is probably something that has always been the case, except for the last few generations, right?
Up until my generation, it was typical of previous generations where you lived in multiple generational houses.
And within the same town, you would imagine. It's
Not but
like
even within the same house. That there wasn't the idea that we have of a nuclear family of being mum, dad, and a bunch of kids, the old joke of, you know, 2.3 kids, a Labrador, and a car in the driveway, is a very new thing in a generational sense. Most people would have lived with either, you know, uncles, aunts, cousins, or grandparents in the same house, or they are living very close by.
Do you think we suffer from the lack of that kind of community and experience today?
I think broadly we do.
Because I feel like I would want that. I mean, and again, I want that with my current situation of not having aunts, uncles, grandparents living in my house.
Mm.
I don't know if I would say the same if they were living in my house. I would probably be like, good God.
Yeah, living in the house. Well, I grew up with my grandfather.
Buy your own house. Get out.
I know. I grew up with my grandfather living in our house from the age of about 10 until, well, I'd moved out by the time he died. But so, he lived in our place. So, we lived in that multi-generational house.
Mm.
And look, it had its challenges. But at the same time, it was sort of good fun to have another older adult around.
Especially an old one who doesn't give a
shit. Yeah, he'd tell stories.
He was a flaming racist, wasn't he?
He had some amazing things. But and I might have told this story before. He taught me to drive when I was about 14, where he called me Jim because his name was James and he decided that had to be my name.
And Dad's name is Ian.
My name is Ian. Yeah. And he said, Jim, it's about time you learned to drive. And he threw me the keys and said, let's go. And I looked at him and said, I'm 14.
I don't have
a driver's license. We're not allowed to drive on the road. And he said, oh, I'm old. Nobody will care. And so, I'm all right. So, and look, all we did was drive up to the local football ground and drive around the car park until he was convinced that I could drive. And then he said, okay, drive home.
Holy crap. So, that would have been 1971. So, relax.
Yeah. It was very interesting. Like, it was completely illegal, but- but that was just the sort of person it was. My father never would have done that.
I hope I'm like that. I hope. I don't think I will
when you
be.
Get old,
but
you don't
I hope
give
I
a
get
shit.
To that point where I'm just like, you know what, grandkids, let's just have some fun.
Yeah.
You won't get in trouble because you're too young. I won't get in trouble because I'm too old. Who gives a
and
shit?
Noah will be sitting there going, Dad, no.
That's it. Anyway, good episode, Dad.
All
good
right.
episode.
Cheers to fatherhood.
Yeah, to fatherhood. See you guys. Alrighty, you mob, thank you so much for listening to or watching this episode of The Goss. If you would like to watch the video, if you're currently listening to it and not watching it, you can do so on the Aussie English TV channel on YouTube. This is different from the main channel. You'll be able to subscribe to that. Just search Aussie English TV on YouTube. And if you're watching this and not listening to it, you can check this episode out also on the Aussie English podcast, which you can find via my free Aussie English podcast application on both Android and iPhone. You can download that for free, or you can find it via any other good podcast app that you've got on your phone, Spotify, podcasts from iTunes, Stitcher, whatever it is. I'm your host, Pete. Thank you so much for joining me. I hope you have a ripper of a day, and I will see you next time. Peace.